Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Larry Wilmore. He's best known these days as the senior black correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. But he's also been an Emmy and Peabody Award-winning writer and producer for such shows as The Bernie Mac Show, The Office, and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And he's the author of the book, I'd Rather We Got Casinos and Other Black Thoughts. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, let me start with The Daily Show, and the question I want to ask you gets talked about a lot. I wanted to get your take on it. The show and the impact that it's having prompt questions about what journalism is, what journalism is becoming, the relationship between what's real and what's true, and so on. So how do the folks who work on the show view what it is that they're producing?
We view it as comedy, as a show that we're, first of all, trying to make funny, you know. And the show, of course, has to have our point of view of why we think something should be funny, you know, or what we actually think is funny about something. We all know it's a political show, you know, or a show that's it's mainly a political show, even though it's, you know, it's The Daily Show about news. But the news is really mostly political, you know, and other things. So, you know, you know that going in. So, you know, whether you bring a certain point of view or whatever to it is kind of in the DNA of the show. But we're not doing the show as a method to do another news show or to present it as, hey, listen to us because this is the real news. So it's never done from that point of view. The show's always been set up as a satire of the news and as a send-up of the news at the same time, both a satire and a send-up.
You mentioned the politics and having a view. Do you think that the show speaks for something or that it represents a particular kind of voice?
It may do it by accident, I guess, or by default. But it doesn't seek to do that. You know, it doesn't say, look, we are this ideology and we have to represent this. And the show never does that. Jon always likes to be pretty fair in terms of how he's going at things. But when he gets really ginned up about something, you know, it's pretty apparent, you know. But it's fun. I mean, everybody has different points of view on things. I always try to be contrary with what I'm doing and try to defy kind of expectations and try to get to what something really is about, you know, what's the underlying thing in it more than anything else.
And I was also wondering in that vein, in terms of the view of the people that are associated with the show about what they're producing, whether that's changed over time. And in particular, I'm wondering whether there's a sense of feeling more pressure now because of the impact that you're having and because a lot of people do turn to this show to get their news.
No, we don't feel any extra pressure or that sort of thing. To be honest with you, we don't even talk about it or think about it. It's not an issue. It's funny because we do get asked that a lot, but it's hard to imagine this, but it really is. We feel like people take it probably more seriously than we intend it to be taken. You know, it's kind of unintended consequences of being a hit type of show and someone as smart and engaging as Jon Stewart. I mean, he really is. I mean, you can see the interviews how engaged he is in a lot of these issues. He's not just a comedian reading lines that are funny, you know.
In particular, though, I know my college students, the ones that I talk to, the ones that I teach, sure, they get a significant part of their news from the program. I mean, they're always referencing it.
Right.
So are you guys conscious of that in terms of, you know, the youth?
I would attribute that more to laziness on the part of the students. Wait, students are lazy? What? I think it's the way people watch television in general more now, too. I mean, who watches the network news anymore? I haven't watched it in years, you know. 24-hour news kind of took over that. And now the internet takes over the way most young people get all of their information. You know, my daughter's on Tumblr all the time for just about everything, you know. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day about libraries, how they seem insignificant because people go, library? What? I have Google now. What do I need a library for? You know? So The Daily Show is another, you know, institution that's been synthesized in, you know, a nice, fun tablet that's easier to take, I guess.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with satirist Larry Wilmore, the senior black correspondent for The Daily Show and the author of the book, I'd Rather We Got Casinos. You got your start, as I understand it.
I'd rather we got casinos and other black thoughts.
Other black thoughts. Well, yes, I was leaving out the subtitle. Thank you.
The other black thoughts are just as important. I want people to know.
Well, you got your start as, if I understand it, as an actor and a stand-up comic. So tell me about that part of your career.
Sure. I was I was a theater major in college and kind of doing stand-up on the sly. And I would always go on auditions and I would kind of change the lines, you know, try to, because I would think of something funnier. And I didn't realize you probably aren't supposed to do that, you know. And the more I did stand-up and performed and that sort of thing, there was a movie called Hollywood Shuffle that came out in the 80s, and it was about black actors trying to make it in Hollywood, and you had to be a certain type. You had to be ghetto, or urban is the code word. You know, I love that word, urban. Like, these black sitcoms are called urban sitcoms. And I was like, well, Friends are urban. You know, that's, what does urban mean exactly? You know? But I realized that if I wanted to present myself in a certain way, I had to kind of control more of the content. So that's why I started writing and producing for television rather than trying to audition against type all the time, you know.
So the transition to writing then was what came out of that impulse.
Correct.
Interesting.
The impulse of, I have to work. I have to create, you know, sometimes you have to create your own space if it doesn't exist there, you know. And it's happened with many different types of things. You have to show Hollywood who you are sometimes and create a niche for yourself. I mean, when I was coming up, there were many different types of black comics, let's say. You know, there was a Dick Gregory, who's a political comic, kind of like a Bill Maher today. There's Bill Cosby, who told stories. Flip Wilson's kind of a vaudevillian comic. You know, you had Godfrey Cambridge, who's kind of a hipster. Red Fox told what was called party records, where he did the real blue humor. But when I was making Hollywood, black comics had become a certain type, that deaf comedy jam type, you know, were more of the Richard Pryor mold. And so if I did political humor and that sort of thing, it wasn't as accepted. There was something, you know, not the same. So I realized I had to create that space for myself. You know.
I'm curious, too, in your writing and your creative work, why the, and this may seem like a silly question, but why the focus on issues of race?
That is a silly question. Some of it just happened that way. I mean, I find a lot of that satire pretty funny, and I guess it never seems to be not interesting to mix, put a lot of negatives in one sentence. But, and here we are with a black president, you know. I mean, I've been doing jokes since the mid-80s about race and that sort of thing. One of the early jokes from my stand-up, I was talking about, because I'm light-skinned, a lot of people were fascinated with, but what are you mixed with? You know, they were always asking me that question. So I finally said, look, let's make it easy. If I was a beer, I'd be a Negro light, okay? And I am a third less angry than the regular Negro. So things like that, I just found that funny to talk about because people always seem so fascinated with wanting to know, you know. Like you were some exotic animal or something, you know. So, but the issues have always changed over time. You know, one of the first shows I wrote for was In Living Color. And it was more than race in Living Color. It kind of brought the hip-hop movement into television, which was a whole cultural movement, which was more than black. You know, it was music, it was clothing, it was, you know, the way people speak, even tattoos. I mean, hip-hop brought in a whole new culture. Hip-hop didn't exist in television when I was doing that show. So that was kind of an interesting thing. But The Daily Show is interesting because I can do more political, real cultural satirical comedy that's topical and, you know, that's in the news, you know. So
you mentioned you were making a joke. You're a third less angry.
Yes.
But I did want to ask you a question about the anger because some of the stuff that I've seen you do on The Daily Show – it does seem like there is
more than a third less angry.
Maybe there is some anger under there, and it's accompanied by, you know, a lot of F bombs. And I'm thinking in particular of the piece that you did relatively recently about Martin Luther King Day. So, does anger play a role in your creative life? And how do you channel it if it does? No.
No, anger doesn't play a role for me. I would say exasperation does more than anything else. I'm not really an angry type person. But exasperation, I usually can't believe something. My style can sound, you know, that way. In fact, the name of my book came out of a piece where I was exasperated over Black History Month, you know, so not angry about it, but exasperated, where I'm like, hey, 28 days of trivia to make up for 400 years of slavery? I'd rather we got casinos, you know. I mean, it's a very exasperated line, you know. But I usually don't write. I'm not the type of writer that writes from an angry point of view. I know many writers are. But it's just not who I am. So it has nothing to do with the content. It's more of my point of view is not that, so.
My guest is Larry Wilmore. He's the author of I'd Rather We Got Casinos and Other Black Thoughts and the senior black correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
I just want to get you to say black as many times in this interview.
Okay, I'll try. Have you done any pieces on The Daily Show that have made the anchor, Jon Stewart, feel uncomfortable? Like they've gone too far?
Right.
What the heck is this?
No, I don't. He's never thought they've gone too far, but I've broken Jon up a couple of times, and that's always fun to do, you know, to see him really laugh at something. But, you know, what's fun about that is in the process of figuring out what the piece is, many times Jon and I will disagree about what the point of view of it is. You know, I mean, it's Jon's show. He's, you know, he has say over what something ultimately should be. But Jon's great with me. I mean, he really respects my point of view on things. And, you know, I had a writing career before I went to The Daily Show and everything. So I really have a nice relationship with Jon.
How does that process work itself out in a show like that when there are disagreements? I imagine since it is so political, there must be some.
Well, here's what the deal is. If there are disagreements over a way to go, you really try to go for the way that is going to make the best piece, you know, that ultimately is going to be the best way to go on something, or somebody wins out with the funnier joke on that side, you know. Or you just feel like, well, let's try that anyway, and you don't even make a decision which is better or which is worse. You just decide to go a certain route. There are many different ways that you decide to go a certain direction.
Well, let me turn to your book, ask you a couple questions about that.
Sure.
Some of your pieces, as I read them, they read to me like, for lack of a better phrase, commentaries within the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, first of all, does that phrase even make sense,
the black community? It makes no sense at all.
Let me try it this way.
Where is this black community anyway?
Well, let me try it this way. That some of your pieces read to me as kind of in-house satires.
Sure. So you're, inside baseball.
Yeah. So, for example, your letters to the NAACP
right.
about changing African-American to chocolate.
Yes.
Other pieces
thank you.
Seem more about race relations, more generally, like your piece on whether black weathermen make you feel happy or then they make you feel sad.
And then they make me feel sad. I know.
And then the piece
for the exact same reasons black weathermen make me feel happy, it also made me feel sad. So especially the fat ones.
Yeah. And then you've got a piece on why black men don't see UFOs.
Right. It's very true. That is actually a very true thing. Brothers rarely see UFOs. I left one out. If I update the book, there was a Barney Hill, I guess, was a brother who I forgot about in the early 60s. So I'd have to do an addendum. But rarely do brothers see UFOs. Very rare.
So the question here is, do you think about your pieces in that way? In other words, are there different categories? Like, I'm writing this for this. I'm writing this for a bigger issue or a broader issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose, yeah. When I was writing that book was a lot of fun because my concept of the book was that I had all this material over the years and someone collected. Like, my first idea was it was my hyper-character, Larry Wilmore, and he was no longer around. Like, I went off to some island or something. This is how I pitched the book. It was very bizarre. And then someone had collected my black thoughts over the years and decided to release them and put them in a book, you know. And that idea sold the book. And I realized that's kind of crazy, you know, but that idea of that, and all of that is made up for the book. Of course, it never existed in any other form, you know. I never did a radio show where I interviewed the man, you know, that just didn't happen. You know? But some of it is you know, a twist of an idea that just seems funny, that anybody would seem funny. And you're right, some of it probably is talking to the community in some ways. Certainly, evidence for why Jesus is black is that type of thing, you know.
I want to come back later and ask you about
sure,
that.
Sure, sure. But then there's really just, I don't know where it came from in my mind, just absurd things like, It's okay to hate black people who work at Starbucks. It doesn't make you racist. Or work at McDonald's at the airport. It doesn't make you racist. You know, which came from me being treated horribly by the people at McDonald's at the airport all the time. But the black people at Starbucks were fine. So those black people were okay to me. But it was the black people at McDonald's at the airport, which I felt were okay to hate. So I give people a reason of how I came about thinking that. And it became this real absurd piece. But then there's another piece called The End of Racism, which actually is a more thoughtful piece about, the, you know, what it really means to come to the end of racism. But then it gets absurd where I make a distinction between what I feel is I feel not everything is racist. Some things fall in the category of it's either brother-friendly or it's not brother-friendly, you know, so I make that distinction, you know.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with The Daily Show's senior black correspondent Larry Wilmore. I got it in again there.
I know. I love that.
I enjoyed one piece we haven't talked about yet that was called Text Messages from a Birmingham Jail.
Yes.
And I laughed out loud when I turned the page and I saw the title.
You're the right age group for that. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about that as a more general thing because the concept of that seems pretty edgy. I mean, you're playing around there with a sacred document from the civil rights movement. So how do you navigate that kind of humor when you're getting into that territory?
You know, that's a great question. Early on in my career, when I worked at A Living Color, I had to say, look, anything is fair game as long as you have a good take on it. You know, there are some things for taste reasons or for just regular human reasons you wouldn't make fun of. I wouldn't make fun of somebody with cancer. You know, that doesn't make sense to me. Why are you picking on? And it's not funny, you know. But there are some things, just because it's a document, you know, I feel like, why would that not be fodder for jokes or whatever? You know, I wouldn't make fun of Martin Luther King's house getting bombed or something like that, you know. But it's such an iconic thing, you know, letters from Birmingham Jail. That just that phrase to me, you know, twisted around a bit for something just seemed funny, you know. But it's funny. But that's some of the book. I realized afterwards that it could be some of it is generational too. Like I have random black thoughts in it where I say Queen Latifah has officially become Pearl Bailey, you know. And I understand that most young people aren't going to understand that. But I was like, that's okay. The target's got to be wider in here. Some targets are different for other people, you know.
And you mentioned the In Search of Black Jesus piece. That was another piece that actually got me laughing out loud as reading it.
Thanks.
But of course, you know, I've got to ask you on that. So what did you make of all the media traffic and commentary that accompanied Megyn Kelly's comments on Fox about white Santa Claus and white Jesus?
Well, there is more evidence for black Jesus than there is for white Santa. No, actually, I would love to write about white Santa in my next book. But the black wait, what do I think of those comments?
Yeah, what do you think of, you know, because she said these things and on air, and then there was this huge firestorm over it, and it got kind of absurd, I think, in some ways.
I agree with you. I believe that did get absurd. I didn't understand what people were so upset about. You know, it's funny. It makes me laugh that you can't defend somebody for being white. I mean, that's hilarious to me. What, like, my point of view is, by the way, what's wrong with the white Santa? What is wrong with that? Why does that have to be torn down like there's something wrong with it, you know? I just think it's one of those things. More people are comfortable with the white guy coming down the chimney than a brother. You know, I think there'd be a lot of issues with that, you know, probably. Who knows? But I think our culture is so quick to, you know, to come down on that side of something, which also makes me laugh, you know.
But there was, I think in this essay of yours, though, there was a kernel of something very, I thought, very serious and insightful. It's the way you started it, where you say,
right,
I'm distinguishing here between a dark-skinned Jesus and a black Jesus. And that made me think about the conversation that you always hear when people bring this up about, you know, whether Jesus was—
Absolutely the point. Yeah. And that's the point with Santa, too. You know, there's a cultural question about who Santa is, and then there's a color tone question, which is insane. You know, culturally, this figure, you know, came up in different regions under different types of names, you know. And And with Santa, the point, with Jesus, the point I was making is that black people don't believe Jesus was just dark. They believe he was black, like he was from Harlem or something, like that's the Jesus that who they feel is black. You know, he's got a kente cloth that he's wearing and, a dashiki or whatever. So that was kind of the point I was making.
Now, as we've mentioned before, you've been involved in a lot of different kinds of work in the entertainment world, writer, actor, stand-up comic, producer. Do you think one type of role suits you the best?
I would say probably producer, just because I like seeing the whole picture of something. I'm working on a couple of projects right now, and it's probably the most fulfilling. Performing, like the stuff I do on The Daily Show, is probably the most fun. Mm. It's more the instant gratification type of thing. Writing is the hardest, but, I've been able I kind of have more of an – I have a real knack for it. So it's one of those things I hated homework in school, and so I choose a profession where I have it every day of my life pretty much. Yeah.
Do you see in the future your career going toward a particular direction where you'll sort of focus more on one thing as you go forward?
No, I've always spread it out. I've always done other things. And I'm also interested in other things besides comedy. I'm actually developing a radio show with a friend of mine who's like a life coach, and it's dealing more with life issues and that sort of thing. Been developing my own type of kind of philosophy to help people just get clarity in their lives and that sort of thing. So I'm real interested in that area as well. And, I have a lot of interest. I'm also an amateur magician. I'm a member of the Magic Castle in Hollywood, and I've come out of the magic closet this past year, even though I've been doing it for years. So now people want me to come to conventions and that stuff and lecture on that. And so there's all kinds of things going on.
Let me get to the three questions at the end. First,
sure. Great.
What's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
The title of the chapter of life that I'm currently living. That is a good one. I would say it is Join Me. This is fun.
Second, what is your worst trait?
My worst trait? Oh, definitely is procrastination. I actually procrastinate my procrastinating. That's how horrible procrastinating. I'm like, I'm actually going to procrastinate writing, but first I have to procrastinate that actual procrastination. So that is absolutely my worst trait.
Normally I don't comment on these answers, but I got to say this. We have a lot of politicians on the show. The very common answer is I'm impatient. I do things too fast. So it's refreshing to hear procrastination.
Oh, absolutely. I'm the worst at it. So it's good for me to have structure. Like, that's why I like doing a lot of different things, because I'm forced to have to do something. And, in fact, people would say, Larry, why do you write? And I say, because I have a deadline. Otherwise I would never get anything done.
Finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Probably The Daily Show, to be honest with you. I did not see that coming. It was nothing I planned. It was not a direction of my career that I thought was coming at that point in my career, because it was kind of a detour for me at the time, but it was a creative break that I really needed. Didn't see it coming. It completely surprised me. Everything that's happened from it has been a complete not only bonus to my career, but to my life, to be honest with you.
Well, that was Larry Wilmore, and his book is I'd Rather We Got Casinos and Other Black Thoughts. Larry, this has been a lot of fun. It's also been insightful. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest. You can also follow us on Twitter at Campbell Convos.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.